Teaching meditation can be a deeply rewarding experience. Help others improve their mental and emotional well-being, reduce stress, improve focus, increase self-awareness and self-regulation, all while deepening your own practice and understanding. Join acclaimed author, Buddhist teacher, and Emmy Award-winning musician David Nichtern on Tuesday, May 28th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for a free online discussion on teaching meditation in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern on May 28th.
I'm Rachel, the creative director for Ram Dass's Love Server Member Foundation, and I'd like to welcome you to our Inner Academy, a virtual Dharma hall where our family of wisdom teachers will help you navigate your daily life by bringing ancient wisdom into a modern context. With over 200 hours of audio and video teachings, meditations, and practices from teachers like Ram Dass, Krishna Dass, Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, Roshi Joan Halifax, Joseph Goldstein, and many more, the Inner Academy is your core resource for finding balance, presence, and navigating the ups and downs of your daily life. The Inner Academy has guidance for every step of your journey. Choose from an annual or monthly membership and gain access to past and future courses, retreat replays, virtual community, and much more. If you've been familiar with Love Server Member Foundation for a while, you'll know that most of our offerings are given freely or on a sliding scale basis. So when you subscribe to the Inner Academy, you're paying it forward and bolstering our ability to continue creating accessible offerings for all in the future, as Ram Dass wished for us to do. Be here now and start your journey with Ram Dass's Inner Academy today. For more, visit ramdass.org/innerAcademy.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey everyone, it's Raghu and I'm back with another Mind Rolling, and quite happy to share with you this podcast that I did with Krishna Dass and David Silver, both of whom were instrumental in the making of Brilliant Disguise, the Samadhi of K.C. Tiwari. And we wanted to let everybody know, we haven't done anything like this where we talked about the making of the movie and the gestation of it and the particularly the closeness that Krishna Dass, the close relationship that Krishna Dass had with this incredible mentor of ours from back in the day. And you really get a glimpse of what it was like for us to be back there with Ram Dass after he went to India the second time round. And we all met Neem Karoli Baba and subsequently K.C. Tiwari, an extraordinary yogi concealed in the dress of a family man and headmaster of a boarding school in the foothills of the Himalayas. So happy to share that. And David Silver, of course, directed this film and has some really interesting stories around his meetings with Tiwari as well, KC. Also, at the very beginning, the podcast starts out with Krishna Dass talking about the movie of me. And in reality, K.C. Tiwari was the antidote to the movie of me, as you will see when you see the film. By the way, the film is available everywhere where you can rent Amazon, Apple, Google, Vimeo, and others, other platforms where you can go and just rent the stream really inexpensively. So please take advantage of that. It's I have to say it is I'm just really proud of the fact that we were able to do this. And we had footage of him from back in the day of Tiwari. So I would say you're in for a treat. You are in for a treat, for sure. So I was saying the other thing was that Krishna started out talking about the movie of me, and those of you who have been to any of his events or seen him or heard his podcast, he talks about how we are so subjectively highly interested in me, day in, day all the day long. I, me, mine, as the Beatles said. And so I also, many of you may know that we have a project going from the movie of me to the movie of we. I do with Duncan Trussell, our podcast guru. And so Krishnadas was the inspiration of this these talks that we have. It's going to be an audio book, Duncan and I, over the last number of years. And it's a beautiful little teaching that Krishnadas gives around the movie of me and the antidotes to it. So that's it just starts cold right there. And I love the fact that, like I said before, the antidote to the obsession with me, mini-me, is well spelled out in this Brilliant Disguise movie, because that's really who Tiwari was to us. He was, as I say in the film, he was our be-here-now awareness teacher. And it's that be-here-now that helps us to transform out of the me into the realization of the we. So here you go. No more needs to be said. This is Mind Rolling with Krishnadas and David Silver. And we'll see you next week.
So yeah, the thing is, we wake up in the morning, we start writing, producing, and acting in the movie of me. And then we write reviews, which we read and get more depressed. And the weird thing is that we also play everybody's part in our own movie, because we don't know who anybody is. All we have is our version of everybody and everything that we think is out there. But really, it's just our version. So I'm actually playing your part in my movie, the movie of me. And this is how our lives go by. And not only that, everything we do is part of this movie. And it all revolves around me, 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 me. It's all subjective. It's all my version, my own reactions, my likes, my dislikes. And it doesn't end. And at night when we dream, that's really a movie. You know, that's, and, this fits in a lot with what they call dream yoga, and the idea that these our lives are actually a dream, and that there's a place in us that's more awake, which we are not aware of because it's back and in. So we don't see that part. All we see is ourselves on the screen of this world and of our minds, our thoughts and emotions. You know, and there's nothing you can do in the dream to wake yourself up. That we fell asleep and we didn't set an alarm clock. And we forgot to tell someone to come in. We got to be at work at 9:30. Wake me up. But that's where grace comes in, because the guru, our own Atman, our own soul, our own true self, is already awake. And if we have those karmas based on the work we ourselves have done on ourselves, we get pulled back into that awakened state for a minute or two every once in a while. And that begins to break the attachment and the identification we have with our stuff and our thoughts and emotions. That's why grace or connection with with a teacher, with a guru, is so important, because we're lost. We're asleep and we're dreaming and we don't know. We think this is real. And of course, on one level, it's real in the sense that if we decide to go play in traffic, we'll get hit by a car and get killed. That'll feel real. But doesn't it feel real at night when we're dreaming and we're chased by a tiger? We run. You know, we don't go, I know you're not a tiger. And you're gone in the dream. So these great beings, what they are is awake. And we're asleep and they're here to help us to wake up. Why? Because they know that they are who we really are. They're antaryami. They're the living presence within us. So it's not outside. They're not doing it for somebody else. And since there's no self identification for them, they're not doing it for themselves either. It's just ultimate compassion. It's just this real nishkam karma, this selfless service, desireless action. I remember Maharaji once asked Tiwari, "So you're a Brahmin. Tell me, what does Krishna teach in the Gita?" So, you know, Tiwari knew it was a setup, but what could he do? So he said, "Well, the main teaching is nishkam karma." "Ha! You miserable Brahmins, misleading the people. Only God can do nishkam karma." Oh. So that's been rolling around in my head for over 50 years. What did he really mean? What did he really mean? Well, God within us, our true nature, when that's who we know ourselves to be, there is no desire behind the action. There's no need, no want, no lust, no longing for stuff anymore, because we woke up. It's not that we became one with everything. We recognize the truth that we are one, period, So, but, the problem is that mostly we get born, graduate high school, drink some beer and die, and that's it. It's over. We never wake up in a whole life. And if we don't wake up in this life, the next life, there's no guarantee either. So then again, conversely, if we're waking up in this life just a little bit, it's because we've planted those seeds. We have already tasted what it means to be awake. But the movie of me just keeps going on. And the me is never liberated. The me is never free of suffering. The me is made of suffering. But when we break the identification with the me, with the small self, the ego, Ramakrishna talks about how the chanting of the divine name works. It's really cool what he says and what he doesn't say. What he says is that every repetition of the name is a seed. And the seeds get caught by the wind and they're blown around. They get caught on the roof of an old house between the tiles. And this is, we're talking 1850s in India. So the tiles are clay and they're not super hard, So over time and seasons, wind, sun, rain, the tiles begin to break down, get softer. At that point, the seeds of the repetition of the name begin to take root and the roots grow. And they grow and grow and grow, and they destroy the roof of the house. And they keep growing, and they destroy the walls. They destroy the whole house. Ramakrishna says that house is who we think we are. So, and what are some of the things he doesn't say? He doesn't say it'll feel like this. He doesn't say it's supposed to feel like this. He doesn't say you'll feel blissful, you'll feel angry. He doesn't say it's not about what the small self thinks it's feeling. You plant the seeds will grow, the house will be destroyed. The belief and the identification in the separate self will be destroyed. and the clouds of delusion would be blown away, and the sky is clear. And it's all open space everywhere. Presence being Maharaja's big form.
Beautiful. Thank you. That is a perfect segue into introducing here David Silver. Thank you for coming, David. And of course, Krishnas. And we are just talking a little bit today about the movie that came out this past fall. It is the end of 2022 that we have been working on, had been working on for about 5 years, from 2017 to, well, from 1969, yes, or 1970 when we met Turai.
Yeah.
It's really been going on that for that long, but it was from 2017 till 2022. David, I believe, David, who directed the film, and Krishnas and I took part in the producing. And it was 2017. Do you recall, David, that that's when you started working?
Yes, I think I do. It was interrupted, you know, by various things. It wasn't as if it took solid 5 years, but I imagine it took a solid 3 years. And, you know, I've been thinking before the podcast, what was the magnetism of this for all of us? And for me, you know, I met Tiwari twice in Westchester, once in Westchester and once here where I'm sitting in my apartment, where he came to visit me. And the impression he made on me was, you know, so huge for such a short sort of two encounters that it never left me. And his visual, the look of him sat in my head forever. Now, when you do a movie of this kind, which has lots and lots of archival footage, you're looking at someone thousands of times. And, you know, occasionally you get bored or crazy, it doesn't work out right, whatever. But when I was looking at Tiwari in this film on my Big Mac here, every single time I saw him, no hyperbole, it had a flashy effect on me, like a flashy effect. It just did something to me, just like when I met him. So I considered it to be a great honor to work with him. I've worked with some terrific people in my life, but no one like him. Mm. For starters, you know, I'll tell you a little story, if you don't mind, anecdotally about him. When he came to visit me, he came with Radha and Dina Merriam. And I'm not sure where he was staying, maybe with Mohan and Radha, I think. And I was so like, why is he coming to visit me? Oh, I must be important. You know? And he came with them. And as he stood on the doorstep here, I said to him, oh, I'm so amazed that you've come here. He said, well, you want to know why I came here? I said, yeah. He said, well, I wanted to smoke a cigarette. And someone said, well, what can you can't do that here. But you can go to Silver's house. He smokes. And, you know, that was his explique, you know. So he came in and he spent 2 hours here. And we smoked a few menthol cigarettes together. And in those 2 hours, I was overwhelmed, honestly. Not overwhelmed in a way of just not being able to breathe or something, but just how gentle, wise, and wonderful a man this is. Okay, so when he came next time, he did stay at the Baums. And there was a party, remember, like a big gathering, shall we say. I remember in the kitchen, there was a huge sort of bowl of chai being made for sort of 70 people. And there he was when I arrived, and he was in the middle of a group of people. I saw Mohan at the door. He said, well, come in, you know. And I came in, and after a few minutes, he came up to me and said, I have something for you. And I don't know how long it was between these two visits. It was a couple of years, I think.
At least, yeah.
Yeah. And he brought out a 70-page, rather dog-eared document written by an English military captain. And he gave it to me. And he said, this is the real story of Shirdi Sai Baba. Now, I had told him previously that I loved that saint and had read 200 books about him and so forth. I didn't think he'd remember. Not only did he remember, but he brought this thing with him and gave it to me. I remember we were in the lobby of the house. He handed it to me and he said, now read it. Now there's a party going on with all my favorite people in the world, you know. And I said, now? He said, yes, now. And he pointed to a small bedroom and pushed me in there and closed the door. So it took me however long it takes to read 70 pages of typed material, probably an hour and a half or something. And then I came out and found him. And I was holding it. And I said, this is so kind of you to give this to me. He said, no, not give. Give me back. And I gave it back to him. And he said, did you read it carefully? I said, yes, I did. He said, well, I remember how much you love him. Mm. And then he was turning him and then he looked back and he said, you know, Maharaji held this document. He held it in his hand. Mm. Glad you read it. That concatenation of events really did change my life. No exaggeration. I mean, I was just mind blown that he remembered this person in America and brought this thing all the way from India. And it was a great treasure. And then gave it to me and then took it back. And it was inevitable that I would want another connection with him of a deep kind. And the way I got it was by helping make this film. Mm.
David, do you remember the name of the guy who wrote that?
No, you know, on my walk this morning, I was hoping you wouldn't be asking, because it was like Captain
Patrick. Attendi?
No.
No, okay.
It was an English name. English and it was some dude who'd been there and cheered and had some kind of darshan with him and then written this whole thing based on talking to all the people in the village. Beautiful, incredibly well written. But that was my introduction to it. And then to be involved in a film about such a wonderful being. I mean, Katie, you were talking about a movie of me, and if anybody could break it for you and yet not hurt you with that, it was him. And in my small conversations with him, he broke the movie for a minute, turned off the projector, and you went into a real space with him, even though you can't call it samadhi. That was not what it was. It was just camaraderie of an incredibly deep and beautiful kind.
So for many of you who are listening and have been with Krishna Das, who has talked about K.C. Tiwari many, many times over many, many years and really spent more time with him than any of the Westerners. And there was a few of us that spent quite a bit of time, people that went to India, and of course he came a couple of times to America. And there's no way of overestimating the power of the transmission that was no transmission. As you just said, David, we were just hanging. It was a community. We were hanging out. We were being with the family. A family was such an important thing. And it of course, in the movie, you see that at one point early in the film where the story is told about Maharaji telling Tiwari to take care of the Westerners. And he really did that. But to me, aside from all the incredible, marvelous, deep spaces that we got into with him, the power of prayer that I've never seen anybody display this kind of, when he called the deity came down. I mean, it was just extraordinary. But And you talk about it in the film, Krishnadas, a little bit about the family, the way in which you particularly, because you live with them more than anybody, the way that you were integrated into that family and the difference between what we have mostly grown up with in the West was pretty extraordinary and a very powerful. Can you just talk about your relationship there?
Yeah, well, First of all, you know, most of the time I would just sleep in the living room on the couch at first, the beginning of my time with them. And people would be walking through the room all day, all night. And it didn't bother me. It was the weirdest feeling. When I was home and growing up, I needed a lock on the door. You don't walk in that door without knocking. You're going to get shot, you know. It was like, but that was completely absent from this family, that it was all open and free and everybody was very at ease with themselves. And they all went through a lot of crazy stuff. I mean, but like Shared, who I was most closest with, the oldest son, he had a lot of, in the middle part of his life, young and early part of his life, he had a lot of drug problems. He was a very wild guy. And, but you never, there was no judgments. I mean, he was part of the family, and nobody, it was all, everybody knew everything, you know, it was, you know, I mean, in, with three generations of people living in one room, okay, not this family, but you can't, there's no secrets, you know, and you don't need, and then as I recognized that I didn't need to keep secrets and I didn't need to pretend to be anybody, I could just be me, it was so liberating. Mm. And I mean, and of course, Tawar took it to the ultimate extreme. You know, I mean, by the end of, we would sleep in one bed and Ma would sleep with the kids and Mrs. Tawari. And, you know, Bob would get up in the morning, like around 3:30 in the morning, and go pee, come back to bed, sit down, boom, you know, gone in samadhi for hours and hours and hours. I would like turn over and go back to sleep. Not once in, I knew them from like, say, the mid 70s. Not once for 22 years did he ever say to me, like, maybe you should meditate or even would you like to meditate? I mean, not once did he. And I now, I understand that better. I mean, at first I was really upset that he never, but it had to come from me. And if it wasn't coming from me, it wasn't coming. It was okay. He didn't have an agenda for me that unless I wanted it, you know? So, and there were times he did things, you know, like he put me in samadhi a couple of times. He raised my kundalini a couple of times, almost killed me. But, you know, choking to death, you know?
Yeah.
And,
what?
We were in, I had brought a girlfriend to India with me.
And I'm laughing because I know this story.
Yeah, but so we were in, usually Tawari and I would stay in the same room all the time. But now with her, I got him in a room next door to us. So one morning I got up and I went to the other side of the room to kind of meditate or whatever I pretended I was doing. And all of a sudden, you know, something I could, and I was like choking. I couldn't swallow. I could barely breathe. I'm like, but I knew it was okay. I was worried. But she had never seen anything. She ran into the room, burst into Tawari's room, and he was just sitting there and said, she didn't even say anything. He just went, don't worry, everything's okay. Go. Like that. I mean, he knew what he was doing. Yeah. You know, there's a funny story. I don't remember if it's in the movie or not, but at first we weren't very close with Tawari because of KK. Was that in the movie? Did I tell that story in the movie?
No. I don't think so.
Because KK and Tawari had Brahmachari Maharaj, who was a great saint and was Sombari Baba's reincarnation.
Yeah, another great
he
saint.
He was the teacher and the guru before Maharaji showed up of Tawari and KK. And when Brahmachari Maharaj left the body, he left some money with one devotee who happened to be KK's nephew, with the instructions that that money was to be used to build a Shiva temple at KK's Kuti. And so years and years went on, but the temple was never built. Nobody, it wasn't. KK was angry at Tawari because as the eldest devotee of Brahmachari Maharaj, KK felt it was his responsibility to make sure it happened. And he kept on talking to Tawari about it, but Tawari would avoid, you know, and then not do anything. And, you know, so KK had really bad things to say about Tawari. He was very pissed off at him. And that was transmitted to Ram Dass and to the Westerners. And so even though we went to dinner at Tawari's in 1971, we did not have a good connection with him at that time because of KK. But the way the story played out was that many years later, I was in Kinchi with Tiwari, Casey, and KK shows up. And he comes up to Tiwari and he says, I know why you didn't have the temple made. And Tiwari just didn't say anything. Because the money had been given to KK's nephew, and KK's nephew had given it away to his sons, had spent it all. And there was no money left to build the temple. And KK looks at Tiwari and said, and you knew this? And Tiwari just went, yeah. Why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you tell me all these years? Tiwari said, would you have believed me? And then KK broke down, weeping. Mm. And then he went off and made us halva, alu halva, with about 10 pounds of ghee. And we had to eat it, and we had diarrhea for weeks after that. I mean, it was just unbelievable. Mm. But that was the way Tiwari was. He was very, he didn't interfere with things usually. He left things, of course, that's not always true. I think every situation was different. Mm-hmm. Without to worry, I would be dead now, because I was addicted to freebase cocaine, and I was not going to make it. And Tiwari came to the West. First, he went to Canada, and so I flew in from California. I spent the night in New York at my father's place smoking freebase. Then I got on a plane to Canada. I drove out to the townships. I walked into the room where Tiwari was sitting with Sunanda. And Tiwari had his back to the door. And as I walked into the room, I felt this like force field. I actually started to back out of the room. And he turned and he looked at me and said, you promise me now you will give up cocaine. Promise me now. And I couldn't say no to him. So I said, okay. And from that moment to this moment, the desire for cocaine has been completely gone from that moment to now. There had never been, cocaine, shit, maybe shit's better. I don't know. It's gone. And he did that. They did that. He and Maharaji and Mom, they all, because without that, I wouldn't be here. I would be dead. Mm. So he did do what he had to do, and he did it in his own way. And he knew much more than he let on.
Some of which comes out.
He had the darshan of all the gods. I mean, he had these experiences. Mm. He told me once, and the other thing he said, like he said in the movie, he said that Maharaji never taught him anything with words. He taught him everything in his dreams.
Yeah.
He told me he had this dream once where this golden yogi appeared to him and was showing him how to unlock the chakras one by one in order to leave the body consciously at death. And they got about halfway up, and Maharaja shows up and goes, what's he showing you? What nonsense? Bake out about what use the shit is this? It's just like this. And Tiwari was gone. It's not in the dream. And the yogi was gone.
Mm. So great. Let me interject here that everybody listening, of course, wanted to let you know that you can watch the film easily now on all the different usual, on all the usual platforms, being Amazon and Apple and Google Play and Vimeo. So for a small rental fee, you can stream the film. So that just happened in the last couple of weeks. So I want to let everybody know that. So, it's because you're talking about how Tiwari in that moment really helped you with that particular addiction. At the same time, kind of this, it's a funny story, but he came over, actually, we were all living around Westchester County, Krishnadas and Mohan, our other friend, and Radha. But he came over to where Parvati and I were at the time. And we had I had a cave down in the basement that was like a meditation room. So we were all down there, and he suddenly says, okay, we should smoke some charas and offer it to Lord Shiva, which charas meaning marijuana.
Hashish.
Yeah. And which is the prasad for the god Shiva. So Krishnadas, who does not smoke. Did you smoke in high school? Maybe you smoked in high school. Some pot.
I smoked in college a little bit, but yeah. I didn't like it. Maybe paranoid.
So yeah, right. So he never did it. But Tiwari insisted that we all participated. And it was like, you know, offering. The people were doing it. So he wanted to make sure it was being offered in the correct manner, you know, as an up level to the way that we were recreationally using it and so on. So he made Krishnadas do it, who didn't want to do it. Krishnadas passed out for about 6 hours.
No, I don't remember. I remember him passed the chillum around.
Yeah.
And we were supposed to do puja. We were there, we were going to do a puja. So they passed the chillum around. I took a hit. And then I said, okay, when are we going to do the puja? And everybody looked at me like, what are you talking about? We just finished 4 hours of puja.
That's what it was. It wasn't a pass out. Yeah. It was a pass through.
I was just gone. Absolutely gone.
Yeah. So the non-judgmental part, he had no judgment going on about anything, although he would. From time to time, do what he did with Krishnadas when it was really important for somebody to get a message. And you talked about meditation and the fact that, and this happened to all of us, he'd be going on or he'd be sitting for hours and he never made any kind of move that would indicate there was any judgment that we weren't doing it, that we were asleep or we were whatever. But in the film, actually, this is from the film. It was such a great thing. He was, and what happened is that there was a part where Kabir Das, part of our community, Satsang, he's the one who had taken this incredible footage of Tiwari in and around Kenchi, mostly around Kenchi. And part of what was happening is KC Tiwari was sending messages to various people who were back in the West, and he wanted to record it so that he thought Kabir would then show it to them or share it with them in some way. So there's one particular individual. Let me just read the transcript from this. It's actually pretty phenomenal. He was saying to them, I would request you to meditate and observe things in the right perspective. And you have always been trying to hold on to things. I'm telling you not to hold on to things. Let them come and let them go. Flow. Be free. And every time you are caught, and he said, and now you're caught with me. You think that I'm something, but no one is supreme. There is only one supreme. So don't try holding on to things. Let things come and let things go. And what to teach you? You're a great teacher. You know more than me, so I request you to be more meditative. Not the type of meditation that is concentration. Meditation is not something to gain power. It's not business. It's a way of life, just as we eat, as we drink. So many things in life, in the same way we should make meditation a way of life. And not attached to it. Concentration is a power game. That's an incredible teaching right there. And I love that, making it a way of life. And that's the way that when we hung out with him, he was constantly in the center of that, of allowing things to be on one hand, but always being present. I mean, he was always present. I think I say in the movie, he was like our be here now instructor without, you know, I mean, he was again in the movie, cause I can't say how many times he came up to me and he would come up to other people and screw the screw back in on the side of our head when we were way off base. And he would say things like, my boy, if you think you are doing it, you are lost. This was like, it was like Mr. Natural. You remember Mr. Natural from the comics from the old days?
Yeah. What he used to say to me was, my boy, is there something wrong with your brain?
I think the other thing, though, that's interesting to note how this film came together in that it really did depict a little bit of what it was like for us back in the day, being there, being with him and being with Maharaji, and how that happened, and can't not include, which we did at the beginning of the film, the reality of what Ram Dass did for us and how he was a funnel that funneled us into this extraordinary being named Karoli Baba, but then around him, these other beings that had such a powerful effect on our lives. And, you know, it's been 3 years and change since Ram Dass left, and KK left just after that. Yeah, maybe just talk a little bit, Krishnas, about, you know, how that was such a definitive factor in how we got to where we are today and how Ram Dass really was a catalyst.
Well, just like with all of us, there's better parts and parts that aren't so good. And when I walked into the room where Ram Dass was sitting the very first time that I met him, I just walked into that room without a word being spoken, without eye contact. The minute I walked into that room, I knew that whatever it was I was looking for, spiritually, so to speak, was real. That it was in the world, that you could find it, and that it was real. And that was life-changing, absolutely life-changing. And as I got met Ram Dass, then I began to project onto him that he was that, that it was him. But as we got to know him better, we began to understand that it was Maharaji coming through him. And there was a long period, you could say, of Maharaji coming through him, despite Ram Dass identifying with his own stuff. And then by the end of his life, after the stroke, and as he continued to surrender to Maharaji's presence and his being, that other stuff disappeared. And by the end, the difference between what was coming through Ram Dass and how Ram Dass saw himself was very small, very, very small difference. And
yeah,
it truly overcame, I would say, 99.9% of the egoistic delusion. Because before that, you know, he had doubts too. Like one time, Mondays was the day we used to go to the beach to swim, because it was the only time Ram Dass could be freed of the weight of his body when he was in the salt water. And so, but I would always catch up an hour or so later, because I got up later and I did my things. And so this day I got to the beach, and Ram Dass, I was on my way to the beach, I saw Ram Dass sitting in a car in the parking lot, all alone. And the door to his side of the car was open, the passenger seat. So I walked over, and he didn't look at me. He just was like looking down. He was stewing. He was like, So I kind of knelt down outside the car, and he looks over me. He goes, I'm a fake. And he looks over me and said, and you're a fake too. So I looked up at him and I said, yeah, but we're real fakes. And he just exploded laughing. I mean, Mm. He just, it was so great. Such a great moment. That was my favorite thing, to make him laugh like that, you know. Mm. When it just, he would just explode with laughter. But there was that part, you know, where he really, there was still some, worry that he was making it up in his own head, you know. But that was gone by the end. And by the end of his life, it's so hard for Westerners to, because we hate ourselves so much. You know, crabs, when they're in a bucket, if one crab starts climbing up the inside of the bucket and almost gets up to the top, the other crabs drag it down. And we're like that. Mm. Because we hate ourselves, we see the miserableness in everybody, and we're very hard for us to believe that a Westerner could really, really get it together like this. Mm. But Ram Dass really did. You know, it was quite beautiful.
Yeah. David, you have that, I love that story in New York City with Ram Dass. I remember one night out on the street. Do you remember that story?
Oh, yes. It was after Bob Marley and the Wailers performed at the Beacon Theater.
Oh yeah. You all were there with Ram Dass?
Yes. I went with Ram Dass. And I was working with Marley at the time, so I was getting used to him. Although one of the things he did do all the time, which is sort of similar to something you said before, Katie, that whenever I actually did smoke with Bob, which I'd many times, he would make me go through a certain ritual. One was putting the joint here for a while, up to jaw. David, man, you don't just smoke, you know. And it's the same thing, you know, that given that imprimatur of knowledge and wisdom, immersion, you know, you've got to use it. I mean, Katie, you said in so many of your talks, I love it, every time you do, when someone asks you a question, you know, there seems to be a wall that people come to and they don't know what to do or say or whatever. And it all comes down to practice. Not that you're didactic about that, but, you know, it does. That the laying on of practice, of glimpses that you've had, as, you know, the poet T.S. Eliot called them objective correlatives, fancy way of saying a moment when everything comes together. Mm. And that's what I'm with. That night, actually, after the Wailers performed, we walked out together, and round, you know, at that part of Broadway, there's a divider with plants and things in the middle, you know. You don't go there. You go on the street. You don't go on that part, you know. And Ramda said to me, come with me. And we ran onto the thing in the middle with the grass, and he started leaping and dancing and screaming for two blocks. And I did too, because I thought, well, this is the thing to do, obviously. And he said to me later that evening while we were eating, that he said, I've never seen anything like that. That was just so, so full of the divine, which made me feel so great, because I felt that way about Bob, you know. But that was a thing where he, like you were saying before, Katie, about the doubt that even he had that time when you knelt outside the car. This was one of those moments when you could be a human being and enjoy a human thing and go to a concert and listen to a world megastar, whatever you want to call Bob, and have both things going at the same time. And I saw it in Ram Dass's leaping and dancing, that he just flew out of his normal self. He didn't care whether people on Broadway were looking at him. He had no concept of that. He was just overtaken by the music, the beautiful reggae music that Bob did. What a moment. Taught me something. I thought I was uninhibited, but I was very inhibited. I was sort of jogging along behind him, going, whoa, whoa. You know, I didn't know what to do. He was just so out there, you know. That had as much of an effect on me as anything ever in my life, because it showed me how inhibited I was. And I wasn't, I would have just come out and said, well, it was a good concert. I liked the way he did One Love. Great. Went and chopped the sheriff. It was terrific. And then go home, you know. Didn't Ram Dass never thought of that. He just wanted to celebrate this sort of sacramental and yet very normal human doings. I mean, you know, to go back to Tawar, he would do that too, because he would joke around a lot, at least when I was with him, a little bit, you know, he'd joke around and make you feel, laugh. And when he's in the film, he talks about, no, we didn't ask anybody to do anything, and people would go on with their nonsenses, he said. I love that plural. He said, they're going on with their nonsenses. We're not affecting them in the ashram. We're not telling them to do this or not to that. They can make love. They can do what they want. He saw it all as divine play. And I mean, God, I just feel so lucky I wasn't there with you guys, and I, by osmosis, somehow shared this. What a miracle. Because like you were saying, Krishnadas, you know, when he told you no more freebasing, you know, the effect of all of this on me has been maybe similar in a way, just no more waste of time if you can possibly help it. And of course, you can't stick to that every minute. But when you meet someone as truly charismatic as Casey Tiwari, who just infects your whole life, I see him. I see him. I'm not a person that has visions or anything, ever. But I see him all the time because he really made a deep impression on me. And, you know, and the little feedback we've had about the film, quite a few people who don't know anything about any of this, who went with someone who does, you know, to one of the screenings in probably in L.A. or California, you know, some of those people didn't know who Maharaji was or anything. And yet the film, because of Tiwari talking, had a deep effect on them. They wrote to me and spoke with a few of them on the phone. It just was darshan for people who didn't know what that word meant even.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what's amazing is how much footage we had. You know, how many times do you have footage of someone like this, you know? I mean, yes, if they're a famous, you know, guru or someone like that, yes, it's footage. But if a man that was a school teacher in northern India, to have all that footage that Kabir Das took was a miracle. And when I saw that footage originally, you know, in 2017, I said, yeah, there's a film here. Because I can watch things on TV where they're doing a serious documentary and they've got like four photographs that they use, you know, an American greed. You know, it's just four photographs they have of the murderer that they happen to have. That's all they have. The rest of it is just conjecture or experts. Mm. Here we had at great length KC talking about just about everything. That made my heart jump out of my body. Mm. Fantastic. Yeah. What a privilege. How rare.
And actually, this started probably around 2015, I would say, when I was going to India and spending time, Krishnadas has mentioned, with Sharad Tiwari, KC's son, that we spent the most time with in those days. And I don't know how, I don't even know if I knew that Kabir had this extraordinary footage. I don't remember. I do remember saying to you, Krishnadas, we should do this. And I started just, you know, recording different interviews with Sharad in and around Kenchi. And then Krishnadas, if you remember, when we were in Kenchi, probably 2017, 18, something like that, somebody was there, a good friend who's no longer with us, Steve, with a really good camera, and we went to the back of one of the, called the White House, actually, and started recording, you know, our experiences with Tiwari and so on. And that was the genesis of this film being made. And maybe we did. I think you knew, Krishnadas, that Kabir had some video of Tiwari that you know, that was taken around late 80s, early 90s. And that formed, of course, the backbone for this. But as I said to you not more than a couple of weeks ago, I am so happy that we were able to put this together with a lot of help from various people, editors and so on. The way that it came and what you just said, David, where people who had no idea who this man was and maybe went with somebody who did know or just was connected through Ram Dass and really got what that word means, darshan, being in the presence of. That's really wonderful. Probably the best feedback that we could get. Aside from the delight of this man, he was, with everything else, his incredible, deep spiritual nature, his wisdom, but the delight of just hanging out with him. I mean, we would look forward to going to India and just hanging out, even if, he'd be doing his all-night puja. And I, like Krishnadas, I would end up on his bed and he'd just go to sleep here. You don't have to be involved. You don't have to be here. We'll do it. We'll see you in the morning. You'll have your chai. I mean, nothing that we should or should not be doing anything. The strongest thing he said to me that was a should or shouldn't, I went to India with my mother and I ended up going on a pilgrimage, just she and I and Tiwari through the foothills of the Himalaya. But at first, she first came, we were in Kenchi, and he arranged that we should get with Ma, Siddhi Ma, and we did, and we were having darshan, and she was exhausted from the travel and, the plane ride and coming. We had just been there a few days. So as she was sitting there, she put her feet, let her feet, instead of being crossed, her legs rather, being crossed, pointed towards Siddhi Ma. As soon as she did that, inside I went, I mean, this is like, not done. You do not point your feet at a holy person, in India. And I was, finally, Siddhi Ma said, oh, you're very tired. Go take rest in your room. And my mother said, oh, thank you. And off she went into our room. And then darshan was over and I walked out and I was like, I can't believe this. I was like so crazed. And Tiwari said, are you out of your mind? This is absolutely ridiculous that you should. I mean, however he said, he didn't say it in those words. He just berated me for judging my mother in that moment. I mean, it was the most... the most he ever did in terms of any kind of sort of disciplinarian word that would come out of his mouth. I said in the movie at the end where people queried me about it, he was the greatest human I ever met. So they go, wait a minute, what about Neem Karoli? What about Maharaji? I said, well, that was not what I would call. I'm talking about people.
Wouldn't call him a human being.
Yeah, right. Meaning that there's no, in this being, there was no longer any polarization whatsoever. There's no me and you anymore, Absolutely. Whereas Tiwari may have been real close to that, but there was still a place in him that was a part of us in terms of the me and you. Is that, how do you understand that, Krishna?
Yeah, I mean, Tiwari was Maharaji's disciple. Let's put it that way. That's all. Is Maharaji's disciple. Not completely free, but at one time I was at Dada's house and I was reverencing and respecting him a little bit too much for his own comfort. So he stopped us. He looked at me and said, Krishnadas, he said, maybe I'm a step or two ahead of you and maybe you're a step or two ahead of someone else, but we're all on this shore. Only he's gone beyond.
Just to everybody, Dada Mukherjee, another one of our mentors, we were so fortunate, K.K. Shah, K.C. Tiwari, Dada Mukherjee, Siddhi Ma, I wouldn't even put in that she was also gone beyond. But we were very fortunate. And those of you, to me, some of the greatest, two of the greatest books, particularly a book called By His Grace, which is Dada's story of meeting Maharaji and being with him for many, many, many years, is one of the, in terms of really understanding in any way what this great being is that book. So you can find, we'll put it in the show notes and all of that, so you can find that book and all of what we're referencing here about these great beings that were instrumental to help us on the path that we stepped on in a very, very early age.
Tripped onto and fell onto.
Tripped over ourselves.
Right.
Right. Well, thank you, you guys, for being here. And yeah, I mean, again, this film is such a, I just personally am so happy that, again, I've said this before, privately and in public, I am so happy that we made this film and made it available. And it really speaks not just to this extraordinary human being, it speaks to our experience with Maharaji Neem Karoli Baba. And yeah, urge you all to go out there and take a look. As I said, it's available on all of the streaming platforms. From Amazon to Google to Apple and Vimeo. So that'll all be available in the show notes if you want to just get a couple of direct links. And thank you, David, for the perseverance that you showed. There was a lot of dicey moments in trying to put this together and tell the story in the right way. And so truly appreciate that.
Well, that's, you know, it was such a collaboration, this, I mean, to say the least. Everybody finding different things at different times, but the main thing of all that footage of him, the foresight that you guys showed on Kabir Das, for sure. When I asked him, you know, did you know when you were filming this that someone so many years later would look at it and everything? He said, no, I just had to do it. I was compelled to do it, which just shows the sort of force of that, the obviousness of how wonderful and instructive and everything else we've said about Mr. Tiwari. He knew to film him, and we're happy to give that to everyone now and say, give it a shot, you know, give it a shot, see how it affects you.
Yeah. And the great stories from Kabir, and one of my favorite in the film is how he got into a car accident with Tiwari in the car and another friend, Chaitanya, in Vermont in the winter. It's a wonderful story. It's so fun.
Yeah.
And then Jai Utal tells some great stories too, miracle stories that happened to him that are also really quite wonderful. And then Radha and Parvati and Sharda. So it's very rich in all of that. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Wonderful. This is been a great experience. And everybody tune in to BeHereNowNetwork.com. You can, Krishnadas has a podcast up there, and many of other of our family of wonderful teachers. And we'll see you next week.
Safe travels, Katie. Safe travels.
Yes. Yeah. Off to India, Krishnadas goes.
Okay. Yeah.